The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and it is Friday. It means we're coming to you during the second round, early second round here on June the 15th of the 118th U.S. Open at Shinnecock. We have PGA Tour veteran and PGA Tour radio veteran Paul Stankowski joining us here in just a few minutes as we'll talk about the excitement here of the second major of the year and what a crash and burn scene it was day one for so many of the top golfers in the world. And we'll get into that. Somebody has to win this tournament. And right now, the number one golfer in the world on the golf course as we speak, that being Dustin Johnson, is playing very, very well. But it's pretty obvious that the USGA has decided that nobody's going to win this championship at 14 or 15 or 18 under par. They may not even get anybody under par when it's all said and done. We'll see about that, but it has been a lot of drama, and a lot of guys are having to scramble to come back after yesterday's first round. Frank Bassett, as always, joined us from the Nashville studios. And Frank, once again, a lot of people like when the majors are played and they're tough like this. British Open, U.S. Open usually are very, very tough. And it makes a lot of the rest of us feel like, you know what, my game isn't so bad because I can hit those really bad shots. I can hit it in the hay and not be able to advance it more than 4 feet like Rory McIlroy did yesterday. And so there was a lot of related golf that the rest of us could see our game in it. But otherwise, it was almost a bloodbath, wasn't it?
No. If we had to play in those conditions, if we were on their tee boxes as they are set up today, as that course is set up today, we wouldn't be able to finish. So there.
No.
We wouldn't break 130. I mean, it would be brutal. Those conditions were absolutely brutal. I like that the USGA has gotten back to the tradition of the U.S. Open. Aaron Chambers, okay. That was okay a couple of years, but now we're back to that. It proves that the USGA is tight with God because they called him and said, turn up the fans, and he did yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just howling. And it was brutal to watch Jordan and Tiger and Rory. Oh, my God.
Wow.
And Phil, 8 over. I mean, it was brutal to watch that yesterday. It was a bloodbath. But let's talk to somebody who knows playing in those kind of tournaments. You know,
the leader, we're getting to him. Russell Henley is leading right now. Settle down. Russell Henley and Dustin Johnson are 2 under. So as we speak to you right now on Friday, just 2 under is the lead. And there's only a couple other guys that are Scott Piercy, Ian Poulter, haven't yet teed off. They're even under par. So just being in red figures is a very rare thing in at least this part of the U.S. Open. So, yeah, it's definitely playing where they're saying, okay, par is the score you have to go for. And I think those guys yesterday had to learn that the hard way, that don't keep going for birdies, don't keep going for broke, don't compound one problem with another. You've got to play where a par is a good score. And, yes, Paul Stankowski, I talked about earlier, he joins us now on the phone from his home in Dallas. How you doing, Paul? How's everything going?
Man, everything is really good. I just got a new TV delivered, and it's 65 inches.
Ooh.
And Shinnecock looks nasty on it.
Are you watching in 4K?
I don't know what that means, but okay. It looks really cool.
Yeah, okay. It's good.
My eyes are getting so bad. When I look at the TV, it looks like the TV that we watched 20 years ago, but everyone else sees it really clear. So, but I can see it more clearly now that it's not. Yeah.
The eagle has landed. Okay.
hey, Paul, your best finish, if I'm not mistaken, at a U.S. Open was in 97, which is a really good year for you. You're at Congressional. Was that the best Open you had?
You know, I did play in the Open there. I think I top 20 maybe. That's probably the best one. Yeah. I think I was in the mix. I played Oakmont, the O.J. Simpson Open. And in 94, that was when he was cruising the streets in his Bronco. Remember that?
Nobody's watching golf. Yeah.
I was watching that from the TV was on in the patio and I was like, what's going on? They're like, it's OJ. I was like, oh, and then I played Olympic Club in 98 and
I was there. I was there
fun.
For that.
Watched Payne Stewart wiggle three wiggle or four putt. I guess it was 18. And then, I played in the my favorite one was Bethpage in 02. That was awesome.
Ooh. And so in playing those, though, Paul, in the setup is what we're talking about here at Shinnecock, because the USGA can decide pretty much when they want to have it harder or make it easier. For the most part, the wind and everything is an uncertainty, certainly rain, but this golf course is playing harder. If you notice, the different levels of rough go from a couple inches to 5 inches to 8 inches to 3 feet. I mean, so you start getting into rights and lefts, and it can be very, very tough. When you played even Congressional, where you did have a top 20 finish, do you remember your score? Do you remember the winning score or how difficult that course was set up?
I remember it was difficult. I don't remember the score. I couldn't even tell you. Who won that? I don't even know.
I think Ernie Els. Yeah, Ernie Els.
Ernie Els.
Yeah.
Who won it? Oh,
and I believe only a couple under.
Ernie Els won. Who won it? That was a playoff between. I thought that was Ernie Els at Oakmont and Lauren Roberts.
I think at Congressional, Ernie beat Colin Montgomery.
Okay, maybe Ernie won. Oh, you know what? Ernie won in 94 and 97.
Yeah, he did win too.
Well, that was, those were the two. So, yeah, that was, I remember it was difficult. It's the USGA. That's what they do. You know, they set it up difficult. Here's the deal, guys. You're right. They can set it up as tough as they want. If it's calm out, the guys are still going to play well. There's guys, I mean, if you can't hit the fairway, you're not scoring well, period, in the U.S. Open, traditionally, right? Rough is usually, you know, 5, 6, 7 inches, whatever. It's brutal. But without wind, if you're in the fairway, guys are, you know, they're going to find a way to get the ball on the green, in position, that type of thing. You throw 25-mile-an-hour winds like we saw yesterday on firm, fast greens, then there's no chance. You know, guys aren't going to have a chance. So the USGA is very happy that the wind was blowing like it did yesterday. The players are not. But if the wind calms down, you know, I don't even know what the forecast is. I think it's for a lot less than what we saw yesterday. Am I correct in that?
Half the winds today.
Then, you know, the winning score might be under par if it's fairly calm. But I'm looking right now, the flags are straight out. So that's, you know, 10 to 15. Blown.
Yeah, 15 or so.
Which, you know, anything under 20 at 15 miles an hour, that's essentially a club, maybe just a skosh more than a club of wind. And at 15 miles an hour, the wind is actually moving the golf ball a little bit. At 30 miles an hour, like we saw yesterday, the wind is moving the golf ball, right? That's very difficult. But at 15 or less, it's not that big a deal for the tour players. But you throw hard greens in there and a tucked pin, tucked front left with the wind down off the left. Yeah, I mean, you're going to be putting from 35 feet, right? And that's never fun at U.S. Open greens. You add to the mix bumpy Poana. You know, looking at those putts yesterday, it was ugly watching them wiggle. You know, that's unfortunately when you get in the area of the country where you have Poana grass that's predominant, you're going to get a lot of wiggly stupidity, which is, you know, there's so much more luck goes in, is involved putting on Poana grass. You know, we've seen it at Pebble Beach. We've seen it at Chambers Bay, which had, what, 9 different grasses on it. We saw it at, we're seeing it here this week. Anywhere where there's Poana, San Diego, I still don't know how Tiger made that putt in 2008 at Torrey Pines, Torrey Pines. There's so much bobble and wobble and wiggle. You saw Tiger miss a putt yesterday that was in the middle. It dove. It didn't dive. It got rejected left because of some, you know,
little bloom, yeah,
patch of Poana or something, and he just started laughing because it's like, you know, you're like, all right, this is stupid. So that's where it's like, you know what, 100 years ago, that's fine. You know, this day and age with great grasses and mowing practices, and it sure would be nice to have a good surface to putt on, so that when the 30 mile an hour wind is blowing on the green that's 12 on the step meter, the slope is 2 where the hole is, that it actually will roll true. But so the combination of hard, firm, windy, and bumpy greens, of course the scores are going to be high.
And they were incredibly high. Here's a stat for both of you guys. It's kind of mind-boggling. The top 10 players in the world, world golf rankings, yesterday, the top 10 players were combined 52 over in the first round. So, Stank, I'm asking you, why did so many of the top golfers have such a tough time?
Well, what's the average? What was the average score yesterday? 77?
Yep. It was high.
I would say... It was, yeah, it was at least five over, somewhere in there. Yeah. Right now, the projected cut is six over.
I didn't see the numbers, but it was seven, it had to have been 76 point something, right? So we'll say it was 76 and a half.
Somewhere in there.
Take 10 players, that's 65. So the best player in the world played better than the average, right? So that's it. I mean, golf is hard. Okay, we'll start with that one, right? Frank, you know that.
Wait a minute. Let me write that down. Give me a pen.
Yeah,
write that
golf
down.
Is hard.
Golf is hard. I'll find out today.
The U.S. Open is difficult. The wind makes the golf ball do funny things, and then bumpy poana. There you go. Now you have it. That combination with really firm greens.
Can we really talk about our pre-show this morning and how to work the ball out of a bunker?
Right. Yeah. And if you don't know how to draw a golf ball out of a bunker from 25
you have no
feet,
chance.
Then you have no chance. You shouldn't even play the game of golf, according to Zinger. That was the funniest comment I've ever heard in my entire life. And he kept at it. He kept at it. Oh my gosh! If you're going to be a great player, you got to learn how to work a golf ball out of a greenside bunker, which you're not even making contact with the ball. That was the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Well, if you're going to step in it, you might as well track it through the house. You might as well.
Now, granted, the ball did move from right to left. Yes, it did. So
in a 30 mile an hour wind
might have had
wind was blowing 30
from right to left.
Something to do with it. Hey, by the way, Tiger yesterday. Off to a terrible start with a triple bogey on the first hole. Today, opened on Friday with a birdie on the very first hole. He has now just had a bogey, so he's back to
eight.
Even par for the tournament. Yeah, so he's at eight over, which, again, the projected cut right now, and that could move certainly, but is at six over. So he's in the mix of being able to at least play on the weekend. But what did you think about his play yesterday, Stank, as far as Tiger? It seems, especially coming out of the gate, when you prepare and you're preparing, you're ready to go. And how disheartening is that to get a triple bogey when you've been on the range for 2 hours and working and everything you're doing, and then somehow the very first, it's like Tiger, and maybe he does have kind of a newbie feel because this is his first U.S. Open since 2015. It just seemed very unusual that he would play that poorly. I see a bogey here or there, but to have a triple bogey on the first hole just seemed really kind of disheartening and took a lot of the wind out of Tiger's sails right out of the gate.
And that was from the middle of the fairway, was it not?
Yeah.
But
it was on the greens, really, where it happened.
Good shot. You know, obviously, what's a good shot? Well, there's two elements to a good shot, or good result is, you know, obviously the distance you hit it and the line you hit it on. He hit it on a good line. He just hit it the wrong yardage, and you know, from there it was a debacle, and he bogeys the next hole. But he settled down. What I liked about it is he settled down and strung out a bunch of pars, threw a birdie in there, and. You know, was at three over when I tuned in, and then he had a four putt, which is unlike him. But at the same time, there again, it's I'm gonna say we got a little poana. I watched him hit a few putts. His putting his stroke does not look like the old Tiger stroke. The old Tiger stroke worked pretty darn well, I think. That might be a stretch. I think he was a pretty good putter in his prime.
Well, he had four bad holes, basically, and that was it.
Yeah, he did. But, I mean, like I say, so he makes a triple on one, which was an anomaly. It wasn't like he hit it in the heather right, left, and he was all over the place. It was a fairway. It was right on line, so he had two accurate shots line-wise, and then one, but the distance control was bad, which you have to have it. I'm not going to spin it any other way. It was a bad start. It was a triple. He's four over after two. And then he has a four putt in there and a double. He had back-to-back doubles. So, you know, it's one of those days, right? It's hard. The thing is, as you guys said at your intro, you know, if you played this golf course, you'd still be playing. Well, the thing is, that is the golf. U.S. Open golf is more difficult than anything else on the face of this earth, golf-wise. The difference between a tour player and a really good player is the mindset and being able to start triple bogey and not shoot 100, right? Because, you know, if I made triple and bogey on the second hole, I'd be thinking, golly, I just want to break 90. And, you know, Tiger was still, he's still got the mindset that he wants to win the golf tournament. And you know what? he still could, and he still can. Anybody at 10 over par still can if they make the cut. You know, they can. These players, the top 10 players in the world, like you just said, that shot 50 something over par, they have the ability to shoot 65 out here today. You know, they do. Even in windy conditions, they're the best players in the world. If they're dialed in with their game, they can shoot a low score. All of a sudden, that guy who shoots 80 yesterday, and if he could shoot 65 today, which would be amazing, but if he did, now he's five over, you know, couple under, he might win if he gets back to even. So the mindset of these tour players is not like, oh, okay, I'm done after making triple. It's like, okay, I've got my work cut out for me. Let's keep going, you know, and that's the mindset. You got to just keep plugging, knowing that I'm good enough to make 3, 4, 5, 6 birdies in a row, even at the U.S. Open. It's been done.
Well, well I'm curious, you said it at 10 over, like McIlroy. I mean, McIlroy was 10 over yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm curious about that too, Paul. Paul, let me ask you this though, Paul. And we're talking with Paul Stankowski, tour veteran and veteran on PGA Tour Radio. You heard him last week in Memphis, working with our good friend Earl Forsey. And Paul, I don't know. A few minutes ago, you went out in the garage. Don't do that again, because your audio went way down. So stay right where you are right now. Don't keep moving around.
He was going to the refrigerator.
Yeah, secondly, talk specifically about Rory. I mean, if you're Rory, Paul, what is your mindset in an opening round of a tournament that you would be 10 over? Can you really realistically go, boy, I can easily shave 12, 18, 15 shots? You're going, man, I shot an 80. I don't know if I got anything that's going to get me back into this game or not. What is your mindset today if you're Rory?
Well, that's a good question. Rory, you know, to me hasn't been very sharp, and sharp isn't like 8 holes of sharp. Sharp is, you know, a month straight of playing really good golf at this level. These are the best, and Rory was one of the best players in the world. You know, is a great player, right? Is he the same now as he was, you know, 5, 6 years ago? I don't know. I mean, his game looks different, right? It just, you know, I'm not real confident. I didn't have him as my pick. I wasn't surprised to see him play poorly yesterday. I think you have to have a U in your name to have a chance to win this U.S. Open. And it needs to come in the second part of your first name, second letter.
Dustin. That's about
one
it.
One of those two names are going to win the Open in my mind. So, but as far as Rory goes, he's an anomaly to me. It's weird. I mean, when he's on, he's amazing. But he has a propensity in the last few years to be off quite a bit, right? And there's a ton of great players now on the PGA Tour, and you know, it's funny that the names keep, you know, the best player in the world, you know, has been DJ for a long time. But it seems like, you know, you get these runs from Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Dustin, Jordan, Ricky. You know, I'm like, I'd love to see Tiger.
Oh yeah.
Climb into this thing again, you know, somehow, some way, and maybe this is not the year. You know, he's just coming back, but you know, it sure is fun watching him swing at it and not limp off after he swung. He looks strong, he looks fit, and you know, he's just getting a little bit better, I think.
Let's talk about strong and fit. Do you think there's any correlation between Rory McIlroy and his workout regimen? Has that had a negative, or could it have had a negative effect on his playing?
You know, from what I heard, that he was changing up his workout regimen. There's no question that fitness and vanity have really entered into the fray here the last couple of years, last few years on the PGA Tour, right? I mean, everyone's wearing shirts, you know.
Oh yeah.
Brooks Koepka wears a medium, and everybody's wearing these tight shirts, fitting, showing their guns. It's so, I mean, the golf style from Tiger's 97 win at the Masters with this shirt that all the way down to the crease in the elbow and just huge drapey shirts to skin tight, you know, real fit, and everyone's showing off, which is fine, man. You work out hard and you're ripped, chiseled, show it off. But my point in that is there's so much of that going on that I don't know if squatting, you know, 300 pounds or whatever they're doing is good for you long term. I have no clue. These guys are athletes now. They're getting really strong. But I don't know. I'm not a physio guy. I'm working out. I hire a trainer. I'm doing things. You know, I can't lift more than like 6 pounds anyway. So I'm not doing heavy weights. But you know, there's something to getting stronger. I don't know what the upper limit is. You know, how strong do you got to get? How big do you got to get? I don't know.
Weren't you one of the first though, Paul, back in your day to show off the guns? I remember that was a big part of your push. I can't even say that without laughing.
Show off my guns? I've never had a gun. I own a gun. I don't have guns. You can't get a shirt sleeve small enough to fit tightly around my arm. So I never had that.
Like a 4-year-old kid's t-shirt. Yeah.
I don't.
Those
I
are wish my shirts.
I really wish I did. You know, I should start doing curls.
FootJoy Extra Large, the tour issue, as you know, they send us our shirts for PGA Tour Radio and all that. They sent me all extra large. Well, they hang down to my crease in my elbow. I mean, it looks like I put on my, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's night shirt. I mean, geez, they're huge. But I like baggy shirts when I play golf. I don't like it tight when I'm trying to swing.
Some of it's just different style, right? I mean, what they're wearing. Look at their tight pants that they're wearing, too. I mean, their
I don't
pants
like that
are
either.
All around their ankle. Yeah, I mean, it's just a different style.
A
you go back
about,
to Johnny Miller.
You're talking about their tight pants.
Around their ankles. Versus you watch Johnny Miller and some of the great stuff with Tom Watts. They had those big bell-bottom plaids, right, that they were winning U.S. Opens in and stuff. So sometimes it's just a style, and it comes
Tim,
and goes.
I am Tim. You've been watching the National Car Rental commercial too much.
I am so I am so thankful the bell bottoms have
gone.
Not made a run back.
Yes.
Oh,
that
thank you. I'm with you on that.
Look.
I'm with you on that.
I cannot stand looking down and not seeing my shoes. Not that I have great shoes, because I never cleaned them. In fact, that was one thing I never did in my career was leave my shoes to get them cleaned. I hated having clean shoes. But I couldn't, like, bell bottoms just crack me up. It's an awful look. They got to be streamlined, got a little slim leg. That's perfect. But the style has changed. You know, I do like the shirt that doesn't have a collar. I mean, or has that, you know, the edge on it doesn't have a floppy collar. Golf is fun, man. It's cool. You know, there is some good style out there.
But what about all the guys that you see a lot of them. John Cook does it. Bubba Watson does it. They button their top button on their golf shirt. I don't get that. That would tend to bother me trying to swing.
Personal preference. Phil used to do that. Remember, Phil popped his collar too. Remember back in the day?
Phil had
his collar up around.
Oh, had
his,
it flipped up
over his ears.
We all used
like
to
Elvis.
Do that. Yeah.
Out there.
That was a cool look.
Yeah.
That was the collars out there now, most of them are the pointy collars, so you really can't flip those up.
No.
Look like
Batman.
you do look like Elvis.
Exactly.
Thank you for coming. Yeah.
Who was it that always wore his the floppy hat? Jim
Colbert.
Colbert. I love that. I love that look. He could pull that bucket hat off.
Right?
Yeah, bucket hat. I love those.
I think he had the collar up too and the floppy hat.
I think he did too.
He'd give the little guns up when you hit the top.
Guns up.
I love it.
Who else can we diss today? Let's get after
it. You're not dissing. That's good stuff.
Those are great memories, man.
They are.
Yeah.
Great memories. Golf over the years has evolved. It goes through stages, but from a player standpoint, I love where we're at. We have a lot. There's so much diversity on that leaderboard. Tons of great players. And like I say, when great golfers get on a run, you know, they're amazing, right? And then you watch guys, the great golfers, struggle, and you're like, okay, good. I feel good about myself because even they struggle, which is good. But golf is a hard game. There's no question. It's the ball just stinking sits there, just taunting you. And man.
And I want to ask you about that too.
What you guys feel like when you're playing?
Us guys that don't know how to play the game, you're right. And by the way,
speak
rain
for yourself.
Is kind of
I know how to play
up.
The game.
If you look at the. The pictures now at Shinnecock, it's getting moist out there, Paul and Frank. So it's starting to rain a little bit. They're pulling out some umbrellas. So very different than yesterday. Hot, dry wind all during the – so softer greens now, what that will mean for the afternoon guys, the group that will have Mickelson and Jordan Spieth and Jason Dale go off later. We'll see if that affects those guys. But there is some rain now coming out on the golf course. But back to your point, though, Paul, about the ball just sitting there. rule change. We've talked about this a lot. Yesterday, Tiger had to back up after he addressed the ball because it oscillated, and he called someone over, and the guy said, okay, did you cause it? No, it just kind of blew. In the day, not that long ago, that would be a penalty stroke. So
yeah, and
I know we've talked about this before. I don't know how you guys played in the day when you had to call that on yourself and go, well, I didn't even touch the ball. The wind blew a little bit. The earth rotated. Whatever happened, I didn't do it. And yet, yeah, I've got to sit there if I want to be that way. Did you have those kind of incidents? What was that like to have to call yourself on a rule that you knew was just a dumb rule?
No, it was a dumb rule. And that happened to me. The one I remember was in Michigan, the old Buick at Warwick Hills. Like on 16 or 17, yeah, I hit a 20-footer to about 8 inches, and I walked up to it and put the putter behind the ball, you know, on one leg. You know, you're just going up on one leg to tap it in, put the putter behind the ball, I start taking the putter back, and the ball moves backwards. And I just stroked it in the hole, and I looked up. I'm like, that ball moved. And I missed the cut by a shot. And, I mean, that is one of those things. It's like, that is the most ridiculous thing ever. And there again, those greens were bent, a little softer, so you have uneven surfaces, and the ball could be right on a little high spot, and the wind blows or gravity takes over, and it moves it backwards. So I'm glad for the rule now. DJ, what happened a few years ago when he put the putter behind the ball, and then the ball moved toward the putter? Like, okay, how can you cause a ball to move backwards?
Yeah, right.
That doesn't make any sense at all. And so I'm glad they made the change there. I think it's good for the game. I think, you know, the inadvertent or the mysterious ball movement. Come on, this is supposed to be a game of integrity. And, you know, if you make the ball move by hitting it with your putter, you're going to say, yeah, that was me. But if you don't, I mean, usually the look of the shock, people look up, they're like, well, what just happened? You know, usually that means that you didn't do anything.
I'm also curious for both of you guys, Frank, we talked about this before, going back to Tiger Woods, and they talked about it on the broadcast quite a bit on Fox yesterday, that he is to use a former politician's term, a kinder, gentler Tiger Woods. And you saw him yesterday talking mostly with Justin Thomas, walking down the fairways. He had a bit of a smile once in a while. And I'm watching today, earlier on the broadcast, he finished putting on a green and walks off. And there's always cameramen and sound guys right there nearby. And he kind of walked by one of the sound guys and kind of gave him a nice little tap on the shoulder, like, hey, how you doing? And walked past him. I'm going, who was that? I mean, is Tiger Woods, and what do you think about that, being a different kind of guy? And is it just age happens? Is it because he's around these guys during the captaincies that he had with President's Cup, Ryder Cups? Why do you think Tiger is acting differently?
You know, maybe he's more mature. You know, he's in a different season of life. Golf isn't, I don't believe, the most important thing in his world right now, which it was before. I mean, it was his mission was to be the best ever and win more than anybody and, you know, rip the hearts out of everybody he's playing with, figuratively. You know, now, yeah, his kids are getting older. Life is different. I think he, you know, realizes he's no longer the same Tiger Woods, you know, that he was before. He knows he's not the best anymore. He knows his body, you know, is older. There are things he can't do anymore. He can still hit the golf ball a long way. But, you know, there's things he can't do that he could do before. I think all that plays into it. But, you know, maturity is a huge obstacle to overcome or to achieve, if you will, in sports and life in general. And I think that's what you're seeing. I love seeing a little more smiles, which is great. I think as a whole, all the way around, he's endearing himself to people that maybe back in the day weren't really a big fan of Tiger, you know? And now they're going, wow, this guy is kind of fun. It's different. I think it's great.
I like the days, Tim and Paul, of being in the media center when John Feinstein would ask him a question, or Alex Maselli, for instance. You know, Alex and Phil have always had this love-hate relationship. And it seems like Tiger now, in the media center and in interviews, when we're away from the patrons, is he's totally different now. I mean, he even smiled and said hello the last time I saw him. And last time I really talked to him was when I played in a pro-am out on the West Coast years ago at Sahali Country Club when he was in with us. I mean, he never would really communicate with the media. Now he does. And it's,
you know what, guys? Here's the funny thing. You know, remember all those commercials he did, you know, with Buick and whatever? The Tiger that we saw in those commercials was funny. You know, it was fun. He was funny. He was personable, right? And what came out there, and obviously it's a commercial, but that's, I think that was the real Tiger in there. What we saw during tournaments, man, was the competitor.
Game day.
And, you know, it's game day, man. He doesn't care about anybody but himself and winning that tournament, and everybody else is in the way. And that's the mentality of those some of those great guys. You know, Nick Faldo, it's funny, you watch him on TV now and he's funny and you're like, okay, this guy can't shut up. But when you played with him, he never said a word to you. He didn't, he'd grunt. Hey, Nick.
What?
It was weird. But these guys,
the British grunt,
they're different, man. And his objective is to win. He doesn't want to chit chat. Tiger would literally not say a word to you until he wanted to. And if there was time he had something to say, he'd come over and chat you up a little bit. And then when it was time, he would just like
turn it off. Yeah, turn it off. You know, another one like that.
I think it's great. And that was part of what made him great.
Another guy like that, at least from a perception or perceptive standpoint, was Colin Montgomery. I used to not have a real high opinion of his personality until at the Senior PGA Championship up in French Lick a few years ago, which he won. Day one, 40 players shot 80-plus in that thing. Speaking of golf, U.S. Open, Senior Championship, majors are hard, right? But we interviewed Colin, and Tim, you weren't on the show at that time. He was the nicest, sweetest man I think we've ever had on an interview. And even Matthew Lawrence, who interviewed him, Matthew's an old actor, and he does, not an old actor, he was an actor, still is, but he does a lot of radio. He had a horrible opinion of Colin. When I told him we're going to interview Colin, he said, oh, great, just what I want to do. Walked out of the room, he said, man, that's the nicest guy I've ever met. Unbelievable. I'm totally wrong. So, game day, you know.
Yeah, I think it was, it definitely was a different time, and some of those guys, when they're younger, are different. Even when they're off the golf course, I remember I was playing with Hank Haney one time when he was working with Tiger. Haney had his earpiece in, right, to talk on the phone while we were playing golf. He played at least 9 holes, so the conversation lasted that long, 1.5 to 2 hours. He was on the phone talking to Tiger about this and his swing and to do that while he was playing, and mind you, and Hank was playing at that time pretty well. So it was like, I don't know how he's paying attention, but I could hear Hank laughing at different things that Tiger, and so you could tell that their conversation was pretty light, and it was about swing and different things too, but they had a, you know, nice kind of conversation, and you're kind of thinking, well, I never would have thought Tiger would be that guy that you'd sit on the phone with for a couple hours and he'd be telling you a joke and making the guy laugh and all that, but off the course he could be that way. I think when it came to turn it on when the tournament was going and he had to win a championship or anything, just play golf, he was a different personality. So it's interesting.
I'd like to hear from Paul about, Paul, who are one or two of your favorite people from a just fun to be able to play golf with? Who were your favorites when you were in the heat of the battle?
You know, I loved guys who had really bad tempers because it was entertaining. I wanted to be entertained. So,
I didn't talk to them, but I like to watch them.
You know, it was now tempers. There were some players that, you know, you'd have a putt on their line. Say, I got a 5-footer and this guy's got an 8-footer and he hits a putt, and, you know, and then he's like, I can't believe that. How does that putt not turn? How, you know, I'm like, crap, I got the same line. Like, did that not turn or did he push it? You know, that type of thing. I didn't like those kind of guys because they completely would influence, you know, my decision making because they're, you know, commenting on, you know, complaining about this putt not doing what it's supposed to do. So you're like, crap, now what? But the guys who took out their anger on themselves, that was fun. I was a guy that I was kind of a chameleon. I would adapt to my situation. If I'm playing with a guy who didn't want to talk, that's fine. You know, I have my caddy to talk to. But if we had guys that
did you like playing with John Daly?
I did like to play with John Daly. You know, it, with JD, it was like I always felt bad for him because his game plan, like if he had a game plan, if he did that was, hey, I'm going to hit iron off the tee, they wouldn't let him hit iron. The fans would. And so he'd pull an iron out and you'd hear the murmurs and then he'd, all right, crap, put it in, pull out driver, like, yeah. You know, and so that was, I always felt bad for John because it was like he had to just play for the crowd more so than actually play the golf course. But I like guys like Chris Riley, Chris Riley if he happened to outdrive me, which he did later in my career, he's not a long driver, but I realized that I did not belong on the PGA Tour anymore when I got outdriven by 20 yards by Chris Riley on every hole. What the heck just happened? But Riles, like I would hit a shot and, you know, my ball's in the air. I'm hitting a high cut 8-iron, you know, and it lands. I'm like, sit, pipe, and he hits. I'm like, what the heck? Like he would hit before your ball stopped.
Really?
Yeah. And he's just fun to play with. And Joe Durant was another guy, just a great guy. I mean, guys who to me understand life. You know what? This is a game. They're playing the game. Yeah, we want to go out there and win and be competitive. And but they're good guys. Like I like those because then it's not all attitude. You know, then there are some guys that are just, you know, they think the world revolves around them. They're entitled and they feel like, you know, hey, this is all about. Today's all about me and him. I'm like, okay, whatever. Those guys.
We kind of saw we're talking about Tiger changing. In your era, was Payne Stewart similar in the change that happened to Payne? You know, in the middle or near the end of his career.
You know, I didn't spend a ton of time around Payne. I played probably, you know, half a dozen times with Payne. Never in practice rounds, but just in tournament golf. Our lockers were near each other. Was always cordial. Always, you know, he would never, you know, just walk right by me. You know, we would.
Yeah.
But you know, I never went to dinner with Payne or anything. But playing with him, no, he was a gentleman. He was friendly. You know, there again, he wasn't going to chat me up all the way down the fairway, unless I engaged him. You know, and a lot of players. You know, if the guy made bogey, you don't talk to him. You know, if the guy just made two birdies in a row, maybe you do talk to him. You just kind of know. You know when you can talk to people. I personally didn't care. I'd try to talk whenever, and I'm smart enough to know when a guy doesn't want to say anything, and I'll give him his space, his space, because it's, you know, it's a game, and he's trying to beat me. You know, but Payne was great. I didn't see a bad side to Payne at all.
Yeah. Hey, before I let you go, Paul, and I know you've got a lot of stuff going on in your world, but let's narrow it down here. Who do you like? We're still early. Like I said, second round as we're doing the show on Friday. But if you had to pick two or three guys that you think are going to come out of this battle, if you will, and the weather being apparently changing as we speak, getting wetter, it'll dry out over the weekend. It's supposed to. Who do you like? Who's a couple of guys that you think might come back from the dead almost?
Well, coming in, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm going to pick the, you know, DJ? Some of the favorites, but I really, Justin and Dustin, those are the three guys. I said it early in the week that someone's going to have a USTIN in their name, that wins this thing, in my mind. You know, the Dustin Johnson's heart, he played three really good rounds of golf and then looked very average on Sunday last week. But he didn't have to be. He was, you know, they were well ahead of the people in the field. It was almost like he was in second gear all day. He's got those long arms. It was like he just had the arm on the forehead of Andrew Putnam and just kind of keeping him at bay, you know, and that's exactly what happened. From the start.
Yeah. Poor Andrew. Woo,
that was, but that's a tough pairing, but you know what? Hey, Andrew, I was proud of him. He got off to a bad start, but settled down and, you know, it's a learning lesson out here, especially for the young guys and the older guys. So that being said, it's a learning lesson. Golf is, and DJ's learned a lot, and his game, I think, is as good as anybody. And he can drive it now in the fairway, which that's what you have to do here. He can hit a 320-yard cut, which is spectacular. His wedge play is good. His putting is good. I think you know, it's hard to pull against or root against him or even pick against him. Justin Thomas has a great all around game. Justin Rose, man, I mean, he is to me Mr. Major, and he's just calm, cool, and collected. You have to have that. I think in my order, I'd say DJ and Rosie before JT, mainly because JT gets a little bit off the hook at times, attitude wise. That doesn't usually bode well in big events if you kind of get a little hot around the collar. You don't see that with Rosie very often or DJ. DJ looks like he's bored on the golf course. So those guys are amazing. I'd love to see Ricky Fowler be in the mix. I think he's obviously long overdue. I love his game. I love his attitude, his action, his energy on the golf course. It's a lot of fun. I think it'd be good too. But it's hard to pull against Rosie and DJ. But I'd love to see Ricky battle, and I'd love to see Tiger figure out a way to make the weekend and actually have a good Saturday and, you know, be in the top 20 coming in Sunday, make a run, and whether he wins or not, it's just fun watching Tiger Woods make birdies and the crowds go nuts and everybody. So I'll be tuned in. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Frank, you have any longer shots? And I mean, DJ, let's be honest, looks like he's a guy that's going to be hard to beat. Two things work against him. One is nobody's ever won the week before a U.S. Open, but then again, those things are there to change, so it could be the first time ever that it happens if DJ were to win. But you have to remember, too, on this golf course, an errant shot, you got to focus so hard. They get in that hay, you get double bogeys that can happen at almost any time on any of these holes that they're on, and suddenly you go from the lead or right there to a couple shots back. You do that a couple of holes. This golf course can certainly take strokes back very quickly. But having said that, who do you like, Frank?
This golf course and the U.S. Open, for instance, or as it is, you've got to be brain dead by the time you finish 18 holes. And Paul can speak to this, I'm sure, because you're doing more calculations than they were doing in NASA to put a man on the moon, you know? Yeah, I mean, but you are. Your numbers are running through your head, and what do I do here? 12-mile-an-hour shifting.
Yeah.
The focus has to be so intense that when you walk off the course, you feel like you've just, you know, been pushed through a ringer, one of the old ringers, you know?
Yeah.
So it really helps to start kind of brain dead, guys.
Which I do on a daily basis.
That's Paul's philosophy. I start there and I stay right there the whole. But I think that's what happens to Rory. Rory loses his focus, Paul. I think that a lot of times we're talking about, I don't know what, he's so talented, but if you also notice, he's very quick too. When those guys are playing and they finish hitting their shot, it's almost a Riley thing to you. They go to Rory, he is ready to swing. And so sometimes I think he needs to take a little bit more time and focus a little bit more. I think he does lose that edge sometime of knowing what he wants to do and having a game plan that he's going to stick to.
Tim, you and I were on the phone yesterday.
He just has too much going on where he tries. You know, the guys who have one shot, I think the game comes a little easier to them. From a stress standpoint, and boy, the umbrellas are out, by the way. The, you know, guys who have, I mean, like, I couldn't imagine what goes on in Bubba's mind on the golf course.
Working Bubba.
He has too many options.
Poor guy.
Well, he can do. But the thing is, he is so good so natural. He could hit any shot at any time. And, like, I wouldn't know which one to pick. You know, I'd be sitting there like, you know, J.B. Holmes taking forever to hit a shot because I wouldn't know which one to hit. What do I do? And that's where I look at a guy like DJ. He hits off the tees in a big cut. He just now, he has like his shot. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot that he's trying to do with a golf ball except put it in the right spot, you know, and Tiger, for him, yes, he could hit any shot, but it was, if the pin was front left, his ball would start in the middle of the green and draw a little bit. Pin was on the right, his ball start in the middle of the green and cut a little bit, right? Even though you have both shots and you can hit highs and lows and whatever, it's still very simple, right? You're looking into a spot to start it and moving it toward the flag stick. I don't know. Maybe there's just too much going on in Rory's head. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in his head and never will be, but
you know, you and I, Tim, you and I were on the phone yesterday for a long time watching the golf tournament together, just talking it through. Mm-hmm. And one Spieth just jumped out at me. I said, look how fidgety he is. He's not still for 1 second before he pulls the trigger. What's going on with him? I don't know. It seems like
he's always been that way.
But it seems more so, though, Paul, right now. It's a little, to me, it's more so. I remember him being that way, but wow, he just looks really fidgety, really uncomfortable.
Well, you know, when people are going well, when things are going well with people, we tend to overlook their little idiosyncrasies. But with him, he's always been fidgety. It's not going well. He's always been quick to react when things aren't. I mean, I don't think he didn't look any different to me. Now, everyone perceives differently, but he didn't look any different to me, except, you know, he's just, there's a lot more he's complaining about because it's not going very well.
That's a good point.
And, you know, it's his, but it all, for him, it all comes down to his putting. You know, when you're not putting well, it puts all the other pressure on the other parts of your game. And then your short game, like you get the have to's as opposed to the freedom, right? Sure. When you have to do something, you're a little more uptight than when you're just doing it. And, you know, I just watched him hit a shot, a bunker shot that was a good looking bunker shot. And the pin was tucked oh so close to the false side of the green and, you know, almost too close. He hit a bunker shot and it checked and went 6 feet past the hole. And then it was 7 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet all the way down the slope. And he's 20 yards off the green.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the US Open. But, you know, was it a bad shot? No. Was it a good shot? It was a pretty good shot that turned out to be a horrible shot. And it took him four to get down from there. And, it's just, you know, you don't ever doubt. We'll talk about that word. We've talked about it before. Doubt is the biggest killer in anything, in any person, right? It's once you doubt your ability to do anything, you're never the same trying to do whatever that is, right? You always have that something looming in the back of your head. Every tour player that's ever played the game has gone through a slump. Your hope is that your slumps are real short, right? 2 weeks. 2 week slump, you know, 3-tournament slump. But putting, it's for Jordan, it's been a long time. He hasn't looked good on the greens. And then all of a sudden there's some doubt. He's still what, number 4 in the world or 5 in the world? But man, oh man, it is, golf becomes really difficult when you have some doubt in there. And you see him, you'll watch him today and he'll have a 6-foot putt. And I'm telling you, that ball's 3 inches off his putter and he's already walking. And that's hard. And to me, when you see that, guys, when you see a guy putting from any distance, and as soon as he hits it, he stands up and starts walking. To me, that started before he even took the putter back. You know, everybody who doubts, and I've gone through it. You're on a putting green and then you can't make a putt from outside 4 feet and you get a 10 footer, you know, as soon as you hit it, that you missed it. And that typically to me starts before you even pull the trigger. There's doubt going into it. And that's hard to recover from. So it's just going to, for a guy like him, that's going to take making, you know, 6 or 7 birdies in a row and putts in a row. And then all of a sudden the doubt starts fading. And then you have 3 good tournaments in a row. And then the great players forget really quickly about the bad stuff. And that's a good thing. It's the shooter. The guy that's 0 for 20, 3 seconds left. They're down by 2 and he wants the rock. Because he knows he's going to make it in his head. And that's what the great players do. They come back from that. I'm waiting for Jordan to come back. I think he will.
Well, I think it's been an interesting hour with Paul, but it's been an interesting first couple of rounds. DJ, as we speak now, when people hear this, it'll all be in the history books. But Tiger just made birdie at 16. They start in the back 9. DJ did as well. DJ has the lead all by himself right now, but Tiger also gets a birdie. So a lot of golf to be played. It is raining pretty hard. These guys are getting kind of soaked out there when they're not under their umbrella. So that could certainly play a factor into how this second round finishes up. But I've enjoyed it, Paul. Thanks so much.
I go, it will. Rain is the neutralizer. Guys can play in the rain. The objective is to keep the grips dry, right, and your glove dry. They have plenty of gloves. Some guys will have rain gloves. The caddies, this is where the caddy really comes into play, man. I gotta keep the water out of this bag. It's a nuisance and a distraction. The raindrops. I mean, when it's pouring, you're hoping it pours even harder so that they stop it because of puddling. But when it's a light rain or whatever, it doesn't seem to affect the players in a negative way. At least the players that have good minds. But it definitely makes the fairways bigger. The greens, obviously, a little bit slower, a little softer, more receptive. Guys will eat it up when it's kind of a misty rain. And so that's kind of it's going to make the golf course easier, is what I'm saying.
Okay, so the guys in the afternoon might have a little bit of an advantage over the guys that are playing right now if it stays moist like that and dampens things. We'll keep an eye on the scores.
Don't use moist in terms of golf.
Moist. Let's. By the way, Paul, while we're checking the scores,
you
going forward. Let's just put that down. You used the word anomaly twice today, Paul. Twice.
I'm working on my big words.
You're doing some big words now, aren't you, there, Mr. Radio Guy? Good for you.
There was another word I used, and I can't remember what it was, and I couldn't spell it. So
there's a couple I used on the radio. Well, got reprimanded for it, but that's beside the point.
Well, Stank, we appreciate it. Have a great Friday and a great weekend, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Absolutely, guys.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
I appreciate it.
Great.
Enjoy the Open.
You too, buddy.
I'll be on PGA Tour Live next week. Hey, Paul and Travelers.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Oh, you will be. Okay. Very cool.
I will be.
All right, Paul Stankowski. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
See you, boys.
Yeah, the Travelers, Frank. Is that the year anniversary from Spieth winning the Travelers? Is that last
year?
Yes,
it is. Yes,
where
it is.
He jumped out of the bunker.
The chest bump. Yeah. The rake and club throw. Yes.
Yeah, they do a pretty cool commercial on that with PGA Tour Radio or whoever it's for. I can't remember who, but they show kids trying to imitate Greller and Spieth chest bumping. one kid knocks his buddy down. And they chest bump. They're like 4 years old.
Someone's going to get hurt. Funny. Yeah. So I've got to head out here. I'm going to head to Vanderbilt Legends Club. Well, this is the annual Mike Heimerdinger tournament. Mike was a coach for the Tennessee Titans and other NFL teams over the years, who passed away a few years ago of cancer. And his foundation, his wife still runs it and his son's involved. They raise money and they have a huge kitchen, a commercial kitchen, and they make meals, prepare meals, I should say, for cancer patients who are in chemo and things that can't get out. Okay, they're at home. So it's cancer friendly, if you will, meals that help. Nutrition is vitally important in any health of anybody. And so anyway, it's the annual tournament. I MC the event, and we have a big gala tomorrow night and a big auction. So Heimerdinger, just Google Mike Heimerdinger or Heimerdinger Foundation for our listeners, and check out some of the auction items. There's some neat stuff there. And we're going to raise some money to help people who have cancer. So.
Very nice. Very nice.
So it'll be fun today. It's going to be hot, 95 degrees here in Nashville. So,
yeah.
But I don't wear shorts on the golf course because my legs look like out of bound markers. So I just don't.
So there you go.
It'll
never be too hot for that.
You playing any charity things this weekend? Right.
No, I have to. This week, actually, on Monday, I am playing in Cliff Harris. Speaking of NFL guys, former Cowboy Cliff Harris has an annual tournament for juvenile diabetes.
Good.
So I'm playing with Cliff and a bunch of people on Monday, so that'll be fun too. Yeah, it's he's done that for 25 years now, I think, something like that.
Well, that's
for a long, long time. But
that's what this is all about. That's why I enjoy doing this. Being a broadcaster, but you enjoy doing this because we do so much, and people think all we do is go play golf. Well, guess what? We get to play a lot of golf, but we get to raise a lot of money for very, very important charities, and that's the best thing that comes out of this whole Golf Talk America thing. So.
Yeah. Play a small role in all that kind of stuff. All right. Well, next time we come to everybody, we'll be talking about who won this tournament. We'll find out over the weekend, next few days. Like I said, the weather has gotten very British Open-like, so it is definitely an Open championship. And when you look at Shinnecock, you would almost think that it is a British Open right now. The look of the course, the rain coming down sideways. It's, boy, get ready.
Hey, Tim, Paul, the title of the show, Paul Stankowski, quote, golf is hard. That's it.
Golf is hard.
Golf is hard.
It's an anomaly.
It's an anomaly.
Big words. Big words for Paul. He used some big words today. All right, we do thank Paul Stankowski for being with us. Yeah, listen to him next week when he's at the Travelers and working with Earl Forsey on PGA Tour Radio. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. Please join us next time when we come to you right here on Golf Talk America.